Touchdowns, sacks, upsets, and last-minute heroics. Another NFL Sunday is in the books, and we've got you covered with the biggest plays and sound bites from another wild week in the National Football League. It's time for No Huddle Offense on the Zach Gelb Show.
When we got to halftime between the Sunday Night Football game last night, the Chargers and the Bengals, and LA was up 24-6, I thought, okay, I'm going to be able to fall asleep some point in the third quarter. Well, I thought wrong. Because going into the fourth quarter, it was Chargers 27, Bengals 20. And in the fourth quarter, Ja'Marr Chase caught a touchdown pass early on to make it 27-27. And then it was missed kick after missed kick for the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Chargers did not want to capitalize until the end, where J.K. Dobbins, as they were basically in field goal range, said, night, night, we're going to win the game and go up 34-27 with under 20 seconds to go.
Hand off to Dobbins. And there goes Dobbins on his horse to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, into the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers. 29 yards. J.K. Dobbins with 18 seconds left.
J.K. Dobbins wasn't just kidding. He gets into the end zone, and the Chargers win the game 34-27. Joe Burrow for the Bengals had 356 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. His last 4 games, 13 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. They're 1-3. Yikes. T. Higgins, 9 for 148. And a touchdown. Ja'Marr Chase, 7 for 75 and 2 touchdowns. Justin Herbert, 297 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, 65 rushing yards. And how about that Ladd McConkey? I would love to hear John Gruden just say, let me tell you what, man. That Ladd McConkey, he's just a winner, man. 6 for 123, had 2 big catches on that final drive that did set up the J.K. Dobbins winning touchdown. That Ladd McConkey, let me tell you what, man. All righty, Stu. What do we got here?
All right. Do you think the Chargers are a legitimate Super Bowl contender in the AFC right now?
You know, we haven't mentioned them. Well, we know that they're good. Solomon Wilcots last week said, watch out for them. They could go to the Super Bowl this week, so give him credit. But it seems like the Super Bowl contenders right now, Chiefs, duh. Bills, duh. I don't think the Steelers will get there, but they're a contender. And then you still put the Ravens in there. I think after that, you know, I usually like to go 3, but I just gave you 4. The Chargers, to me, here's the frustrating part, Stu. Do you walk away last night? I'll ask you a question. Do you walk away last night more impressed with the Chargers or more disappointed and frustrated with the Cincinnati Bengals?
I think it's still the Bengals. I just had such high hopes for this team, and the fact that they've managed to, like you mentioned, just the stats that Burrow is putting up in that offense, it's insane that they're 4-7.
It's crazy. And their 4 wins are against putrid football teams. If you can't beat them, you don't deserve to live, quite frankly, in the NFL. But I walk away more disappointed with the Bengals last night. If the Chargers would have just continued the blowout, then, hey, look at what Harbaugh's done. You still feel this way. The offensive line, the way they run the football, the improvements on defense. But since the Bengals not only got back in the game, but they should have won it, I walk away saying WTF about the Bengals. I really do. So are the Chargers a legitimate Super Bowl contender in the AFC right now? I think they can win a playoff game. I think with Harbaugh, you don't want to play him come postseason time. But do I think they're going to a Super Bowl? Do I think they're going to an AFC championship game? I still think they're a year away. I still think they're missing something. So I'm going to say no. Alrighty, next up. How about this on Caleb Williams? You look at his last 4 games. He has not had a touchdown. He has not had an interception at all. So no interceptions, no touchdowns, passing or rushing. His last touchdown was on October 13th. He had 4 of them in the game up against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not a touchdown or a pick since. Loss since then. And the crushing loss to the Commanders. Blown out by the Cardinals. You lose to New England, you don't even show up. And the crushing loss yesterday. You know what? Let's just do this. Let's hear the Cairo Santos game-winning field goal attempt. It was finally going to be a Bears victory up against the Packers. And then Green Bay said, oh no, you did it.
Here's the snap. Placement made. The kick is blocked.
Blocked.
It is blocked.
Blocked.
It is blocked. And the Packers have won.
Beautiful.
It is blocked. Beautiful. It comes up short. And the Packers have won 11 straight over the Bears. 20-19. Oh, my goodness. What a finish. Wow.
You know, if you would have told me yesterday that the Packers would only score 20 points and that Caleb Williams, even though he wouldn't score a touchdown, his numbers in the game would be 23 of 31 for 231 yards, and then he would add 70 rushing yards on the ground, I would say, oh, the Bears popped off on the ground, and that's where they got their touchdowns, which they did. You know, they had 34 carries for 179 yards and two rushing touchdowns, all the numbers on the ground. I would have never thought that they would have lost that game, but the Bears just find new ways to lose. Jordan Love, 261 yards passing, passing touchdown, rushing touchdown, and a pick. Josh Jacobs, 134 total yards on the ground. And Josh Jacobs did find the end zone as well yesterday. And Christian Watson, 4 receptions for 150 yards. Adunze, 6 for 65. DJ Moore, 7 for 62. Keenan Allen, 4 for 41. So Packers, they go to 7-3. Bears fall to 4-6. And Stu, you have a question for me.
Yeah, can a case be made that the Packers are the second best team in the NFC?
Not after yesterday. No, even though they won. Philadelphia, to me, is the second-best team in the NFC. You want to tell me the NFC North? All right, you can maybe make the case. You know, them or the Vikings. But I think the two best teams in the NFC, Lions 1, Philadelphia Eagles, in at number 2. All righty, let's go to the game of the day yesterday. It's the Chiefs and the Bills. The Bills hand the Kansas City Chiefs their first loss of the season. Kansas City has now lost 4 in a row in the regular season, going up against the Buffalo Bills. Bills haven't been able to beat them, though, when it matters in the postseason. 4th and 2. This could go either way in this scenario. You could kick it, and then you got to go hold Mahomes out of the end zone, and you would have had, at that point, a 5-point lead in the game, or you go for it. I honestly, because I usually say I don't like to criticize people after the fact. It's what I think in the moment. In the moment, I go, it's close. It could go either way. I'm fine with them going for it. Even if they don't get it, then it's a 2-point game and all Mahomes needs a field goal, or you go for it and you try to end the game. Well, on 4th and 2, Josh Allen really said, I am him. I am the MVP. The game is over.
Allen going to step up in the pocket. Now he's going to take it and run, and he's got the first down and more. 10, 5, and muscles his way into the end zone for an unbelievable 26-yard touchdown run. Are you kidding me? He's a beast with a capital B, and he would not be denied.
This place is going nuts right now.
Usually when you're saying a capital B, I'm not usually hearing the word beast there. I'm hearing something else. That's just me, but I kind of like the call. Mahomes in the game, 23 of 33 for 196 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Kansas City only had 78 yards rushing. Their leading receiver, Xavier Worthy, with 61 receiving yards. Josh Allen, 27 of 40, 262 yards through the air. A touchdown, a pick. Also had a rushing touchdown. He led the team in rushing. Buffalo, 31 carries for 104 yards. Had 3 rushing touchdowns. As you did have James Cook get 2 of those rushing touchdowns in addition to Josh Allen's 1. Khalil Shakir, 8 receptions for 70 yards. Curtis Samuel did have a receiving score as well. And good performance by the Bills defense. Stu, what's the question here?
Do you think that this loss is actually good for the previously undefeated Chiefs?
No. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's bad. They could still win a Super Bowl. You'd rather win the game than lose the game. Don't tell me, oh, they don't have to deal with the pressure of being undefeated. Come on. It's unlikely that Mahomes will ever win the tiebreaker up against Brady because Brady beat him in the NFC Championship game. The AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. So what could be the trump card over Brady if Mahomes doesn't get to 8 championships because Brady has 7 with those tiebreakers? Well, one would be an undefeated season. The other is still on the table. It would be winning 3 Super Bowls in a row, something Brady was not able to do. So is this loss actually good for the Chiefs? It takes the undefeated season off the table. So I'm not going to say that this is good for the Chiefs. I'm not saying, oh, the sky is falling, though, and Kansas City's now screwed. But the Chiefs finally got what they deserved, and that's to lose the game. They should have lost the game a few weeks ago, but they kept on finding a way to win these improbable games. All right, let's get to the next game. I love to see this yesterday. The Jets are just such hot garbage. And a few of my friends at this Friendsgiving that I was at are big Jets fans. And it's amazing how confident they are. And how much smack they still talk. It's like, What are you talking smack about? Your team sucks. You have no championship. You have one championship, none in your lifetime. Your defense is overrated. And Anthony Richardson, the team gave up on him. They gave up on him, the Colts. They went to Joe Flacco. And then after 2 weeks of seeing those two losses, they went back to Anthony Richardson. And Richardson had a career-high 272 passing yards. He had a touchdown and 32 rushing yards and two rushing touchdowns. And Anthony Richardson was just on fire. Now, I asked this to Hickey yesterday, and he didn't appreciate this question. How do you think he answered it? Was yesterday's game more so Anthony Richardson being good or the Jets' defense just being so overrated? How do you think he answered it, Stu?
100% that it was Anthony Richardson being good.
He did say, well, the Jets' defense is overrated, but it's Anthony Richardson being good. If that's how you're going to plant the flag in the ground on having a franchise quarterback is judging how they play up against the Jets, that means you don't have a franchise quarterback. But Anthony Richardson did have a great game yesterday, so give him credit for that. Josh Downs, 5 for 84 and a touchdown. Alec Pierce, 3 for 74. Quiddy Pay did have 2 sacks in the game. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, what a joke. 22 of 29 for 184 yards, 2 passing touchdowns. And the offense's first 5 drives in the game. No first downs and 27 yards. Yikes. Breece Hall, congratulations. He had 121 total yards and 2 touchdowns. Devontae Adams, 6 for 72. Garrett Wilson, 4 for 18. The JATS Jets. Just end the season. Could be saying that for the last 4 weeks. Oh, wait, I have been saying that for the last 4 weeks. Let's listen up. This is the game-winning touchdown run as Anthony Richardson says, night-night to the Jets.
Richardson out of the gun. He's going to set it off left edge. He's at the 5. Cuts into the end zone. Pulls his way into the end zone. Touchdown, Anthony Richardson. His second rushing touchdown today. And the Colts, with the score right there, lead 28-27 with 46 seconds to go.
And Stu, I know I kind of already asked the question, but you know what? We're not in Indianapolis. Let me hear the question again.
Sure. Did Anthony Richardson prove that he will still be a legitimate NFL starting quarterback?
If you say that after one game, you're dope. Like, the thing with Anthony Richardson, we've seen him have a moment or two. Now he's got to have several moments. And no, after one game up against the GD trash Jets, I'm not going to sit here and say Anthony Richardson is now a legitimate franchise NFL starting quarterback. All right, you want to talk about a hot mess? We go from the Jets to the 49ers. Those two teams met up in week one. They may both be golfing. The Jets are already golfing. The Niners may be golfing in a few weeks from now. They're 5-5, and they blew another one. It is crazy how they lost that game. I'm watching that game, and when they forced that stop on 4th-and-1 with 4:01 to go, I go, okay, they're going to find the way to survive. Then they punt, and then Geno Smith marches down the field. It was mayhem. Geno. He went off and running, and he went off and running into the end zone.
Geno gets him back to the line of scrimmage, 22-21, gets the snap, looks, steps up, gonna run, 10-5, Geno, touchdown!
Holy catfish!
Seahawks! Holy catfish!
Yeah!
Geno Smith runs left side, can't find anybody open, from 13 out, 12 seconds left, and the Seahawks take the lead, 19-17. Are you kidding me? No quit in this bunch.
Clearly, when it was 17-13, a 4-point lead isn't insurmountable. But once again, when you get the turnover on downs, I'm thinking the Niners are going to go win the game. And Geno Smith with a holy catfish moment. 221 yards through the air. No passing touchdowns, a pick, but at 29 rushing yards and that rushing touchdown. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 10 catches for 110 yards. DK Metcalf, hopefully a future New England Patriot, 7 receptions for 79 yards. Tyler Lockett, 2 for 19. I do think the Pats are going to get T. Higgins, though, not DK Metcalf. Brock Purdy, yikes, 159 yards passing, a touchdown and a pick, 40 rushing yards with a rushing touchdown. Has 4 touchdowns and 4 interceptions in his last 4 games. Christian McCaffrey at 106 total yards. Juwan Jennings, 10 for 91 and a score. Nick Bosa and Leonard Floyd had 1.5 sacks each. And the Seahawks, 0 touchdowns in 5 drives with Bosa. Then when Bosa went out of the game, 2 touchdowns in 3 drives without Nick Bosa on the field. Stu, what's the question?
All right. How concerned are you about Brock Purdy and the Niners?
Very concerned. I only think one team is going to make the postseason out of the NFC West. As I said before, Eagles will win the East. Lions will win the North. Falcons will win the South. Insert team that you want to pick to win the NFC West. And after that, I think your wildcard teams are Commanders, Vikings, and the Go, Pack, go! And I'm going to rock and roll with the Cardinals right now at 6-4. I think that the Arizona Cardinals are going to win the NFC West. But if they don't, I'll still take the Rams and the Seahawks over them. Niners are the field. I will go with the field. And I think the Niners are going to miss. I'm going to miss. They're going to miss the playoffs. Now, as for Brock Purdy, I'm not going to say I'm overly concerned. I just don't think he's a great quarterback. I think he's good. I think he's solid. I think he could win with them. He got to a Super Bowl last year. But I don't look at yesterday and say, hey, that's all on Brock Purdy. I don't. You know, they didn't have that game-winning drive when they were up by four and they had the defensive stop. And the defense, even after making a stop, they allowed Geno Smith to walk through him like a hot knife does through butter. Cut through him like a hot knife does through butter. So I'll answer your question that way. All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. A recap UFC 309 and also the Fugazi fight between Jake Paul and Mike Tyson on the other side. And we do so with Dean Thomas. A lot was going on in football this past weekend, college and the NFL. Also, a lot was going on in the fight world as well. I was at UFC 309 at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. And you also had on Friday that Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight, which obviously didn't live up to the hype. Made a lot of money, right, for Tyson and Paul. But for anyone that thought that was actually going to be a fight, I don't know what you were expecting. So a lot to recap from the fight world from UFC 309, where John Jones once again asserts his dominance in the UFC octagon with what he was able to do with Stipe Miocic. So let's spend a few minutes talking about all the fights that we saw on Friday and Saturday with Dean Thomas, who is kind enough to join us right now. Dean, how you been, my friend?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. Let's start off with John Jones. That spinning back kick, I'm not going to lie. So I was on the bridge at Madison Square Garden, and when I first saw it and they called the fight, I'm like, wait, hold on. Now, I thought that was a quick stoppage, but then when you see the replay and you see the way the body moves, thank God that they called that fight because that was so impressive from John Jones.
Yeah, I mean, John Jones, that is one of his signature kicks. So let's not make no mistake about that. He's been throwing that kick for a long time. It happened to hit Stipe right where it counted, right in the rib cage. If it hit him, he thought he hit him in the liver. It hit him actually on the other side, but it was still in the rib cage. And Stipe folded. It's not a quick stoppage. I mean, Stipe would have probably wanted to get out of there anyway. I'm pretty sure he was happy that they stopped it when they did.
Now, here's the big thing with John Jones and his future. I think this is just a negotiation ploy right now. You mentioned Pereira, right? A lot of people would love to see the Pereira fight. The fight to be made, though, and Dana said it, is Tom Aspinall. I think why he keeps on bringing up Pereira is you're trying to negotiate a little bit here, and then eventually he will fight Tom Aspinall. Is that how you think this goes down?
I think so, but it's all going to be determined on what John does in these next couple of months, because it's inevitable if he stays at heavyweight that he has to fight Tom Aspinall. He did mention that he would be willing to give up the belt to do a super fight against Alex Pereira. And I don't even think it would be a super fight. I think he could literally drop down to 1 or 205 and fight Alex Pereira for the belt. But he said he wanted to do it for the BMF belt. I don't think the UFC is interested in that. I think that UFC is interested in doing a heavyweight championship between Tom Aspinall and John Jones. Now, if John Jones is willing to give up the belt and go back down, that's one thing. But if he intends to stay at heavyweight, he's not bringing up Alex Pereira. He's not going to do any other fight other than Tom Aspinall. So this could be a negotiation tactic, or it could be true. Maybe, just maybe, John Jones is ducking Tom Aspinall.
Is that how you perceive that to be? Do you think that latter is the actual truth here, that he's just ducking him?
You know, that's what a lot of people think. I think, again, it's going to come down to these next couple of months and whether John Jones wants to stay at heavyweight. If he doesn't want to stay at heavyweight, then he's definitely ducking him. But, again, John Jones is the GOAT for a reason. John Jones is taking on all challengers, and I think he really truly believes in himself. Then after that signature win that we saw on Saturday night, there's no reason to believe that he's ducking anybody. So it could be just a negotiation tactic. However, if it is a negotiation tactic, rumor has it, and I saw somewhere online, this is just pure speculation, and this number could be totally fabricated, that he made about $15 million. Now, if that's not enough to fight somebody, like, I don't know what his number would be to fight Tom Aspinall and why it'd be a negotiation tactic. If he made $15 million to fight Stipe Miocic, what is he? I don't know. What does he want, $100 million to fight Tom Aspinall, maybe that's the case. But there's no other reason why. Like, I'll fight anybody for $15 million. I don't know what the negotiation tactic would be to try to get a Tom Aspinall fight.
I know it's just so – we don't even know when the fight would be. We don't even know the fight's going to happen. Who would you lean towards early, though, if we did get to see Tom Aspinall up against John Jones?
Tom Aspinall. And there was nothing that John did on Saturday night to make me think otherwise. Prior to that performance, I thought Tom Aspinall was the better fighter. After that performance, I'm even more convinced that Tom Aspinall is the better fighter. John Jones is the greatest, and he always shows up. He always performs. But let's make no mistake about it. Stipe was 42 years old, and he looked at the moment he stepped out there. John Jones handled him. He took care of him like he should have. But there was nothing that I saw in John Jones' performance that makes me believe that he could beat Tom Aspinall. Tom is just younger. He's faster. I think he's more skilled, and he's hungry. I don't think John Jones could beat Tom Aspinall, and I'm not just leaning towards Tom. I'm heavily favoring Tom in a fight between him and John Jones.
So does that mean then Tom Aspinall is the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet? Because we know Dana would always say it's John Jones.
Well, you know, I think we oftentimes confuse pound for pound with the greatest of all time. Like, John Jones is the GOAT. His resume speaks for itself. 15 title defenses. No one has even come close to that. So he is the GOAT, but that doesn't mean he's currently the pound for pound best fighter in the world. In fact, I don't even think Tom is. I think that title would probably go to Islam Makhachev or Ilya Topuria, and then Tom coming in at third. But you know, Dana likes to sell John Jones as the GOAT and the pound-for-pound fighter. I think that's a marketing tool to make sure that John Jones showed up in Madison Square Garden and actually fought.
So let me just ask you this then, Dean Thomas. Like, because you think it's going to be clear that Aspinall defeats John Jones. John Jones would defeat Alex Pereira, in your opinion, or with how Alex just keeps climbing up? How do you think that goes? Yeah.
No, I do think John Jones could beat Alex. Based on what I saw Saturday night, I still believe that he could beat Alex. He didn't look like he didn't, you know, these guys, when they're younger, they're savages. And Alex isn't that young, though. So Alex and John Jones are about the same age. But I do think, based on John Jones' skill set, I do think that he could beat Alex. I think it would be a little closer than I originally thought, but I do still think that John Jones beats Alex Pereira.
Which fight would you rather see, though?
Personally, I would rather see the Alex Pereira fight because I think it would be closer. And based on what John has done in his career, listen, there's this contingency of MMA experts that believe that MMA fighters have to go out on a loss. And they want to, oh, he didn't give us everything. I don't know where this comes from.
You know, that's kind of stupid because, like, in the NFL, right, how many times do we talk about, oh, this guy should ride off into the sunset with the championship? Not that way, though, in MMA.
No, they don't do that. They want our heroes to be carried out on a stretcher in their last fight and to pass the torch. I don't believe you have to pass the torch. I love what John Jones did in his career. He's done enough. He just beat the greatest heavyweight of all time. Allow this man to live his life. I don't want to see him go out on a stretcher to Tom Aspinall. I'd like to see him fight Alex Pereira. If Alex beats him, all right, at least it was a fair fight. If he goes out and fights Tom Aspinall, I don't consider that a fair fight. I think Tom is just too good right now. I don't believe that John Jones owes it to us as fans to go out on a loss to Tom Aspinall.
Wrap it up with Dean Thomas. So we saw Charles get the victory up against Michael Chandler. The back of the headshots I didn't love, but then he put on a little bit of a show at the end, having some fun in the last few seconds of that fight. When I look at Chandler, the whole thing's like just kind of sad to me because he waited all that time for Conor McGregor. I never thought McGregor was coming on back. And then you get back in and it's another loss for him. How about that fight?
You know, Chandler has given us what I think he's very capable of giving us, and that's entertainment.
Yeah.
Chandler's not a championship fighter. He's not a championship UFC level fighter. And that is to be able to win a championship and hold on to that consistently. I don't believe that Chandler was built for that. I think Chandler is built for exactly what he's given us. That is a lot of fun fights and a lot of hope. Like, he's given us hope as fans. Like, he's always showed up. He's always gave us the greatest sound bites. He's always made us smile. And I think that Chandler is better than one who became champion and then possibly I don't know. These guys, when they become champions, they start wearing sunglasses in the club and they turn on us. And I think Chandler is better off not being a champion and being a stand-up guy who always gives us positivity.
McGregor's never going to fight him, right? I know he called McGregor's
never going to fight. No, McGregor's got so many legal troubles. I think he's going to be fighting in court for a while. So I don't see McGregor coming back. Maybe ever. I don't know if he ever comes back. And the way he conducts himself and the way I think that the MMA needs to go, and particularly the UFC, I think we're better off without him at this point. You know, he was great for what he's done, but I think the UFC is better off without Conor McGregor.
And even if they schedule a fight, as a consumer of the product, and I'm not like a hardcore UFC guy, but I've enjoyed the sport a lot the last 4 or 5 years, and I keep on watching more and more and more. They could schedule a fight. To me, that means nothing until I actually see him walk into the octagon when they say, okay, let's go. Here's the main event. I just never anticipate him actually fighting again, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's going to do a lot of talking on the internet, on Twitter. He's a champion, and he's got his fans and people who are always going to believe in him, perhaps. But I just don't like his behavior or what he's done these last couple of years. And there's only so much and only so many times you can forgive somebody.
Yeah.
And we've been giving him the benefit of the doubt year after year after year. And what he did to Michael Chandler as a fighter is just criminal. To dangle that carrot in front of this man for 2 years was just, it's despicable. And I'll never forgive him for that.
On the way out with Dean Thomas. So I talked to Dana White after the fight, the Bo Nickel fight too against Paul Craig. And I'm like, what did you make of the fans' reaction? Even when he won, they were booing him and they were chanting overrated. And he said, hey, Bo, he dominated the fight. You know, Paul looks a lot bigger than him. He even shared a conversation he had with President Trump, where President Trump said these guys are in the same weight class. But then he didn't dance around the topic. He said Bo's got a lot of work to do. And Bo knows he has a lot of work to do. What do you think the fighting future is of Bo Nickel with what you saw on Saturday night?
So Bo can be really good. Bo just has to make sure he continues to keep learning. He stays in camp, and he's got to make sure that he's around a lot of smart people that is going to teach him how to fight and teach him how to be a good fighter. And I don't like Bo's excuse of, oh, well, I only have 6 fights. Well, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't be where you are then, right? Like, if you only have 6 fights, maybe you should have been back on the Contender Series. Maybe you should be on some prelims. Maybe you should have cut your teeth in the regional circuit a little bit. But you can't get these opportunities and then start complaining about you don't have enough experience. Because one thing that I do know is he's got more competition experience than almost anybody in the UFC. And that is, he's a Hodge winner in wrestling. He's a multiple national champion. He's got so much wrestling experience. And that counts. That actually does count. Because I've watched fighters Saturday night absolutely freeze in front of the Madison Square Garden crowd. Mauricio Hufi is the best fighter that fought on Saturday night, and he froze up because of the lack of competition experience under them circumstances. Bo Nickel doesn't do that. Bo Nickel has that experience. So him talking about only 6 fights, I'm throwing that out the window.
All right, I got to ask you about Tyson and Paul. I wasn't expecting much. I thought Jake Paul was going to win. What were your thoughts on what you got to see on Friday?
You know what? Prior to the fight, I was saying, I don't know how Jake Paul is going to knock this man out and then look into a camera and explain himself.
Yeah.
Thank God he carried Tyson throughout that fight, because that was the best possible scenario for him. If he lost the fight, he would have been a complete joke. He won the fight. He's still a complete joke to most people. But I blame the old school boxing guys for this. All the old school boxing guys who co-signed on this, who said, oh, Tyson, if he hits him one time, he's going to go down. No, it's those guys who co-signed on this that allowed this to happen in the first place. I don't expect regular fans to believe it, but all the old school boxing guys who co-signed on this, shame on you for allowing this to happen.
And you know that it wouldn't be a night for boxing without a controversial decision. How about the Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor fight?
Well, you know, Amanda Serrano knew what she was getting into, right? She knew that she was going to be dealing with somebody who's aggressive, who charges in like a bull, who headbutts. She should have known better, and they should have been prepared for that. And obviously, they could have done things maybe differently in training to prepare for that, to maybe win a little easier. They didn't do it. So, and this is her second time fighting her. There's enough film study on Katie Taylor to know that that's how she fights. This is her second time fighting her. She should have known better and what she was getting into, and maybe did something a little bit differently in camp to lengthen that lead.
Dean Thomas, always enjoy your coverage and your work for the UFC. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
I appreciate you, man. Anytime.
You got it. There he is, the great Dean Thomas, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. A big weekend for fights, if you want to say that, with what we saw on Friday and then Saturday with UFC 309. So how about that? About Tom Aspinall. I don't even think it'd be close up against John Jones. And that's what Frivola said, too. Frivola said that he believes that Aspinall, when he joined us in studio, would obviously beat John Jones as well. And he even said he'd rather see the Pereira-John Jones fight because he think it'd be better. That's how much of a blowout he thinks that would be with Aspinall, who was the early favorite for a fight that's not even scheduled yet. But there's always a line for something somewhere if that fight does happen up against John Jones, which I do think it will. Alrighty, we will take a timeout. We got a few more things to get to on the other side. Sean Payton has done a heck of a job. The Bears are cursed. We'll get into all that when we return in 5 minutes. Update time first. Here's Zach. Alrighty, it's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, this is a good question. Adam in Erie says, Zach, you always usually find yourself to be meeting famous people. Did you meet anyone famous at UFC 309? It's a good question. You could submit a question by tweeting at INF Sports Center, at Zach Gelb, using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. All righty, Stu. Do you think I met anybody famous at UFC 309? A lot of people in that building, by the way.
I would say yes.
All right. I'll give you the name. You tell me if you think I met that person or not at UFC 309. President Donald Trump.
I would say no.
I did not. The Don and I were not hanging out. RFK Jr.
I would say no.
I did not meet RFK Jr., but I have met him before. I got invited to the Big Three League when they were once at Brooklyn, the Ice Cube's League, and they had me sitting courtside, and he was there that day. So I met him once in passing. Vivek, you think I met him?
I'll say yes.
Did not.
Okay.
Triple H.
Yes.
Did not meet him. The governor of the PIF fund in Saudi Arabia who was there. Yasser.
I'll say no.
I would ask him for some money, honestly. but no. Kid Rock.
Yes.
Did meet Kid Rock.
Nice. All right.
Who one of our intro songs.
That's right.
From the Overnights. Kid Rock. I don't know this for a fact, Stu. I could only assume, though, could only assume by the state that he was in. Kid Rock, obviously good friend of Dana White. He comes into the post-match, post-fight press conference with Dana, sits down. And let's just say he was shouting out a lot of things during the press conference. And he would just provide a lot of commentary based off what Dana would say. And Kid Rock was sitting not that far away from me. And I had a little conversation with Kid Rock. But I'm just going to assume, because, you know, I'm a people's person, right, Stu? I think I can usually pick up and read people. I'm going to assume Kid Rock had quite a few things to drink at that event. That's all I'm going to assume. And I did see before the fight, he was asking to be part of the cabinet, and it was like Trump's liquor cabinet. So I think that is a fair assumption. That Kid Rock had a few pops at UFC 309. A buddy of mine said to me, hey, can I take a picture with you? And Kid Rock goes double birds in the photo. So my friend goes, I got to take another photo. And then he put up the middle finger as well. So Kid Rock was the celebrity that I met. It was not President Donald Trump. It was not RFK Jr. Oh, Elon Musk? You think I met him?
I feel like you would have led with that, so I'll say no.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Elon Musk. I would have said, hey, you know, can we boost up my funds a little bit? Will you pay me for Twitter? You know, for all these tweets I put together? Can we add a few zeros there, Elon? And I would have said, oh, Jim says hello, by the way. On behalf of the Infinity Sports Network, you know, the franchise, Jim Rome, he does say hello. I would have thrown that in there as well. All righty. Let's end the show in the Broncos. You know, I'll also say the Bears are just cursed. All right, if you're a Bears fan there, Stu, yesterday, and you've had some terrible, and I mean terrible, losses, you know, with the Raiders. At least the Raiders, they gave you that one moment against the Patriots where Mac Jones and company threw the ball and then it ends up going for a touchdown. At least you had that.
That's right.
I'm like, what's the Bears moment? I say, when did the Bears ever have a moment? Just this year, you had the Fail Mary, and now you're driving. Caleb Williams comes alive in the final drive. All right, this is the franchise quarterback. We got rid of that the stench of Shane Waldron. We're going to be all right. You know, we got a quarterback. We're good. We're going to be okay. And then here comes the kick. Blocked, blocked, blocked. Like, right, the only thing to say, and I don't usually like to say this, but if you're a Bears fan, you got to feel like you're cursed. They're never going to get this right. They may never beat the Packers again. I don't think they're ever going to beat the Packers again. Aaron Rodgers, it was, you know, he owns the Bears. I own you. No, it's not you, Aaron. It is the Green Bay Packers owning the Chicago Bears. Like, how do you even process a loss like that? I usually say ice cream. You know, I just find a way to cool off the body and feel better. But you're more of an expert on that than me. So speak to the Bear fan. Talk about the ledge a little bit. Like, step back from that ledge, my friend. What do you got for the Bears fan?
Yeah, it has to be food related, I think. And if it's not food related, then
little special brownie, you thinking?
Yeah, or just, you know, at that point, just, I guess that was in the early window. I was going to say, if that was in that second window, like that four, like I've been in a position before where the Raiders have had bad losses in that second window, that 4:30 Eastern time window. And I'm just like, all right, I'm done. I don't care about the Sunday game. I'm just going to go to bed.
Too much football on to just bypass the rest of the slate.
Yeah, at that point, you still have the 4 o'clock window with the Chiefs and Bills. So that's kind of tough. But if it was later, I would say, all right, maybe just stop watching the football for today.
Alcohol. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Hit up our friend Brian in the YouTube chat too. You know, get something to make your mind go away from the block of field goal that happened when you thought you were going to win. Okay, now finally, Sean Payton. I got to give him credit. He annoys me. The last 2 years, I've not been a fan of his. I think he's arrogant, but the guy's a damn good football coach. He is a damn good football coach. This team has no business being 6-5, if we're being honest. When he drafted Bo Nix in the top 15, 12th overall, I thought he was crazy. And I thought we were going to have a moment this year, Stu. And it's weird. I don't dislike Bo Nix. He's easy to root for. He does everything the right way, right? He's a pro-ready quarterback, all that stuff. And it's kind of crazy that the guy that we saw at Auburn is now playing as well as he has been in the NFL. But I've been waiting all year, not for him to fail, because that makes me seem as if I'm rooting for him to suck, but just for him to have a really bad interception where I could tweet out, oh, Bo Pix, because it's such a good nickname. And I sometimes evaluate things based off what makes good content. And I think a Zach Gelbrandt with calling him Bo Pix would be intriguing content. But that Falcons secondary, they're no slouches. They're very good secondary. And I know the Falcons were on the road, but how they weren't even competitive in the game is embarrassing. And I know people look at it, oh, the Falcons, they're going to win their division, but what about an overrated team? I'm not even evaluating it from the lens of what the Falcons didn't do right. It's what the Broncos did right in this game. And Sean Payton had that defense humming. Their offense was unbelievable. You know, Bo Nix, 28 of 33, 307 yards, 4 passing touchdowns, no interceptions. Caleb Williams hasn't had a touchdown in 4 or 5 weeks. Look what Bo Nix was able to do up against a Falcons team where they're not great, but they're not bad. They're fine. They're good. It is amazing how lopsided that game was and how much of an ass-kicking that was. Now, I'll put you on the spot here, Stu. 6-5. Give me the win-loss count for the Broncos the rest of the year.
Okay.
What do you think? Before I give you the schedule, how many wins do you think? They have 6 right now. How many think you get at the end of the year?
Think they'll get 9.
Okay. Raiders.
They'll beat the Raiders.
It always works this way. We always do win-loss with Stewart. It's always the Raiders. All right, so that's 7. Browns.
They'll beat the Browns.
That's 8. Colts.
Yeah, they could beat the Colts, too. That's 9.
Mm-hmm. At the Chargers.
I'll say that's a loss.
At the Bengals.
I mean, at that point, the Bengals might...
What are you playing?
Playing for nothing. So I'll say they'll beat the Bengals.
And then the Chiefs.
Lost. So that's 10.
Yeah, I get the 10 wins.
Wow. Whew.
So in the AFC playoff picture, if I was just to do this real quickly. So the Bills are going to win the AFC East. I guess now you got to say the Steelers, even though it's not a lock, but they beat the Ravens. The Steelers win the AFC North. The Texans win the South. The Chiefs are going to win the West. Your wild card teams in the AFC. Baltimore? And is it the Chargers and the Broncos? I don't think it's going to be the Dolphins. I don't think it's going to be the Bengals. You know, I know the Colts are 5-6, but go beat a real team. Yeah. Chargers 7-3. They get three more. Broncos, we just laid it out. They get four more. You're going to see your wild card teams in the AFC. Ravens, Chargers, Broncos. Right? Do you think there's another team that we should throw in there still?
That's hard to argue. I don't see another one.
And even if the Ravens won the division, the Steelers are going to
get it. Steelers would be the other one, yeah.
I don't believe in the Dolphins. The Jets, please. They have three wins. Indy, they got some talent, but I can't trust Richardson. So, and the Bengals, please. Stop telling me what the Bengals can do. Until the Bengals get back to 500, I don't take them seriously. I don't. They're 4-7. You are what your record says you are. All righty. Bill Parcells, I'm out. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. Fun show today. Big thanks to each and every one of you for checking on in. I'd also like to thank Vernon Davis and Dean Thomas, Samter Stu. Thank you. We'll talk tomorrow. Matt Leinart's going to join us. We'll get rocking and rolling at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.